Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And check it out. The show is live. We welcome you. It's been interesting, to say the least. Elaine is up next in Georgia. Hello, Elaine. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I have two comments. One football and one about the racism. At Georgia, I'm a big SEC fan. In Georgia, I am so happy that they won. When they won the first one, I was a junior at Georgia Southern College we did not have a football team at the time. So we were all fans of Georgia. We didn't get our team until my senior year. Irk Russell was hired. And so JT Daniels to Georgia Southern is awesome. But the main reason I called was the gentleman from Georgia who explained that he'd been everywhere. He was at the game. You know, sports unites us. If we're all on the same team, we're all together. Everybody's high-fiving and we're hugging each other. And then he said that, and when he was speaking, he made mention that he was not talking about all white people, but some whites. Those are the ones who get the most attention. That, you know, after he left the scene, he's looked at differently because he is black, because people make assumptions about you without getting to know you. I have friends of all different races. I am a people person. And I was concerned with the gentleman from Alabama who said that Charles was perpetuating racism himself, and that he had a granddaughter who also felt the same way, that he was working with her own. I'm concerned that although he sees and his interactions with the world is totally different than of his granddaughter. And I'm just hoping that when he's working with her, he's actually listening to her and then trying to make her know that she's okay the way she is, and that because people see her differently, as is no reflection on her, it's a reflection on them, and that she should not feel bad about herself.
Well, Elaine, I'm so glad to hear you say that, and I hope he was listening. I hope he is listening, because that's an important mm-hmm. distinction to make, mm-hmm. and I'm glad you did.
Okay. Thank you so much for
Elaine, you take
call.
Care of yourself. Enjoy the win. It's been a long time coming, and let's talk again soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. J.D. is up next in Georgia. Hello, J.D.
Hey, Paul, you're actually talking to J.D. in Georgia, right?
I am. Good afternoon.
Hey, I will not say how you're doing, because I always know that's a lull in the game. You always say, I'm doing good, because everybody can see you're doing good, Paul. Looking good, brother. How you doing today?
I'm glad you asked. I've been dying to answer that question all day.
But anyway, wow. You know, I used to live up near Atlanta, and I would be one of the callers on 96 Rock. You've probably heard of that radio station.
Oh, sure.
And it would take a while to get in there, too. So it's taking me a while to get in here. Have you ever heard of 96 Rock?
I have heard of 96 Rock. Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with the Atlanta radio market. I was always very impressed with it.
I used to get lucky, Paul. I mean, this was back when we had home phones and we just hit redial, redial, redial. And now, you know, cell phones don't really even do it as quick as the old.
Yeah, no, you're right.
The old brick
phone. When I was in high school and college, we would always try to win contests. You know, the trivia questions. So
right.
There was a way. I can't remember how we did it so quickly, but we would sit around the dorm room and I don't know, you'd win like a pizza or something. everybody would be on the phone, and we'd all dial at the same time. While one guy was looking it up in the World Almanac.
Oh, so you were cheating a little bit, weren't you?
Well, I wouldn't. I refuse to admit that we were cheating. I wasn't. I was calling.
Before Google, you were cheating.
I never remember the DJ saying you can't look it up after I asked the question. This is not like being on Jeopardy.
Well, you're right. No rules. There were no rules. You were trying to get those Allman Brother tickets. I know what you were trying.
No, that would have been a good deal to get those tickets. I mean, I think I won a pizza, like a $5 gift certificate at some local sports bar, but never Allman Brothers tickets.
Oh, my Lord. So I did pretty good then, huh?
Eat a peach.
Hey, I'm going to talk about Georgia peach. Well, listen to me. I'm a manly Georgia peach, I hope. Hey, let me tell you something. My original call, you know, I was sitting here online for a while, or at least waiting in line for a while. You know, my first inclination was to jump on Legend because it just seems like such a good time to jump on him because he's so weak and he sounds so broken. And, you know, I mean, that first call, even when he was back and forth with, I forget who it was, you could just tell his nose was sniffly and he had a Kleenex box next to him. I was just kind of worried about him. And I was kind of wondering.
You got to remember the night before, you know, he'd had the snot knocked out of his team.
Yeah, and was he not the first to talk about getting the snot knocked out of somebody?
Yeah.
And then he got his own snot knocked. So, I mean, okay. That just, what do they say, karma? If you keep talking about somebody else's snot, you might get your own snot knocked out. But anyway.
And by the way, this is not a good time in our environment to be trading snot.
You're exactly right. With COVID and, you know, all these other, I mean, there's a new variant, too, so.
Yeah, I haven't seen the news this week. Is that the snot variant of COVID?
We're going to call it the Legend.
The Omicron snot variant.
And doesn't Legend mean kind of has been, like used to be? I mean, the whole word Legend, I mean, you know, without looking it up, I'm pretty sure it kind of means used to be good, used to be great, like he's dead and gone.
Yeah, I mean,
why would you want to be a legend and alive and walking?
Legend is somebody who used to. Hey, good to hear from you. Thank you very much. Trey is up next. Hey, Trey.
What's up, my friend?
We are doing great.
No flushing today. How about that?
I still thought that was a pretty funny ending to a call.
Well, I appreciate that. That's what y'all should do to him every time he starts like that. Just flush it. Hey, Paul, there's two callers that call in that I really like to listen to. And one of them's Augie, and the other one's Andre. I mean, Andre sounds like, to me, the guy that I think you told me he passed away that used to call in and say, I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let you go.
Oh, yeah.
But both of them have, man. I mean, you can tell they've experienced things and got a lot of wisdom in their phone calls when they talk. But the guy that called in a while ago and talked about race, I'd like to comment to him and hope I can help him out a little bit if possible. I hate to hear that he's gone through some things because of the color of his skin, but I don't think this country is racist. I think we have racists in this country, and I don't think you're going to change those type of people. And I wish he would focus more on, instead of those type people, and focus on the people in this country that really do care about him despite the color of his skin. And I don't think we're ever going to change those. People judge people all the time, Paul, for different reasons. And I just hope I can give him some great advice. I was in the military in a war, and I appreciate his service. But more than anything, I hope he can start focusing more on the people that are good in this world instead of the people that are not. But
well, Trey,
I'm gonna,
you and I both know. I mean, there are places that the two of us could go together, and we would be we wouldn't be looked on negatively because of the color of our skin, but we may be looked on negatively for other reasons. I mean, there's a lot of prejudice in the world. And yeah, I really understand what he was saying. I was glad to hear it.
Paul.
But
I grew up in the '60s, so
sure.
I saw it, and I just hope his experience from the past is not preventing him from enjoying his life today. Because I think we've come a long ways as a country. And we have a long ways to go, but
I think I talked to Sylvester Croom yesterday, and And I sat with him and a number of his teammates 3 weeks ago in Birmingham, and we had it was a banquet, and I had a group discussion with them. And the idea of what they went through, as you know,
it's horrible. It's horrible.
Back then, I was a young person, and I've read a million books about it, but it was still pretty shocking to hear sitting next to this group of players. And I felt wonderful to be part of something that was honoring them, but it does seem rather late.
I do. And Paul, and I'm not disagreeing with the guy at all, because I haven't lived his life or his experience, but he almost said, you don't know what it's like to be black. And I don't.
No.
But I think on the other end too, I don't want to say this kind of like putting him down when I say it, because that's not what I'm trying to do. But he almost did racially profiling, and that it seemed like to me he thinks that all white people are that way, and I just don't think it's true in this country. I think there's more people that care about him as a person than they do the color of his skin.
I think most people, we don't talk about most people very often, though. It's the outliers. Hey, thank you for the call. We will head to Knoxville in about 15 minutes. Find out what's going on with the Vols after their win over Purdue in the Music City Bowl. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Yeah, welcome back. Let's continue with more phone calls here and talk to Tommy, who is up next. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I called because I want to talk a little bit about Charles's call. I'm a white male. I'm 76. I live in a small town in West Alabama, and I taught for 40 years. And 25 of those years were in a school that was 100% black. And I can tell you from my experiences that a lot of the young blacks back in those years, and they still believe it now, and I can see it, that they are treated differently when they get out in the public. We see it in the way they're handled by police. We see it in the way that they're handled when they go into stores. And I know some white people don't understand it, but I do, because I live with them. I coach basketball. And being in the school I was in, I found myself at times when we were away from home playing, I was the only white person in the whole gymnasium. And I had to feel a little bit funny at times, even though I knew a lot of the people there. So I can understand where Charles is coming from. And I think that, you know, Elaine, I think, did a great job. I thought what she said was very, very good. And I was very impressed with her call. But I just feel like some of the other people don't really understand where Charles is coming from. And I wanted to make that statement.
Tommy, thank you for sharing that, because I think you have a real perspective here where most of us, we're just throwing words out there to try to sound right. If you had to summarize or characterize how you dealt with this issue throughout your career as an educator, how would you describe it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, Paul, I'll tell you some things that maybe very few people know about me is the fact that when I was teaching school in an all-black school in a small town, I felt like I was, being ostracized sometimes by the white people. I felt like I lived in two different communities. I lived in the black community. I lived in the white community. And, you know, that was tough. And that's why I can understand how they feel. And they still feel that way today. I know Trey said things are better, but they're a long, long way from being good. They're not. They may be better, but it's a long way till they get to be where it's good. Because these people, they feel ostracized. And they've been that way all their life. Now, you know, here a lot of the young people moved away, and I think they found a much better life, you know, in a different location in the country, or maybe because they went where people didn't already know them. But, you know, it's tough. It's very tough for them, and it was back then, and it still is now for most of them.
Tommy, thank you very, very much for sharing your story with us. We deeply appreciate that. Let's continue with more phone calls here and check in with Harold, who is in Florida. Hello, Harold. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hi, Paul. I have a couple things. Number one, I guess every coach in the country is heading out to Arch Manning's this week.
Yeah.
Trying to recruit.
Seems that way.
I know Napier's out there today, and there was another coach out there yesterday. And I know Florida has some assistants going out there later in the week. So, number one quarterback for 2023 in the nation. Everybody's looking to get him. Saban's going out there Friday, I think. I know we had Harold Perkins here this weekend in Gainesville, and I think he's really impressed with the point where I think we might sign him. But my question to you is, what do you think about the work that he's done since he's arrived, Billy Napier? We've gone from like 70 to number 12 in recruiting, fourth in the SEC in recruiting as of today. And there's a bunch of players that are committed, that have already transferred, and that are also coming. What do you think about?
Well, Harold, you could probably sneeze and improve Florida's recruiting lot. I say that jokingly, but yeah, I've read and kept up with it not as well as you have, but I think he is, you know, he was hired because he's a great recruiter and a good football coach. So I think he is changing the direction, which is the deficiency of Florida was recruiting. We all knew Dan Mullen could dial up a great play, but he had yet to show much improvement where you need to show it. So I think that's really right. A good sign. Beyond that, I can't offer too many suggestions or opinions because I don't think this climb is going to be that easy, but I do think it's he's getting the support you have to have. And this is a do or die hire. After whiffing on Mullen, this needs to work.
Yes, absolutely. I've got some people that I know that play for the team. And this guy has come in immediately. He changed their whole diet. The food that he's feeding them now is a lot better. They had a problem with parking. They'd have to walk like a half a mile to the training facility. He changed that immediately. He went as soon as he found out about that. The guy is definitely, he's hired like over 100 people, assistants on and off the field, made up new positions. He kept two people on staff. Vernell Brown Jr., player development, and I forget who the other one was. I think somebody in dietary or something. But anyway.
Well, Harold, I'm really glad to hear that. I've only had one or two encounters since he got the job. I like him very much. I've always liked Billy Napier, and I hope it works because Florida is too important in the SEC to fail. Rick is in Florida. You are next up. Hey, Rick, go right ahead.
How's it going, Paul? I wanted to talk to Jim from Tuscaloosa. So I played 8 years of professional baseball, and Jim thinks that he would bat 400 in the major leagues. Now, I made it up to AAA, and I pitched in a big league spring training game. So that's as high as I made it. And I'll tell Jim that if on his best day, in his prime, if I gave him 10 at-bats and told him what pitch was coming, he wouldn't have a shot at making contact. Now, that... if he got hurt and he thinks that he would have ended up in the big leagues one day, he would have if he was that good. So that's all I'll say about that.
Well, Rick, I'm glad you're again. He talked about whenever he played, which I don't know what the year was, but you heard it. He felt like he could have been in Ted Williams' category, and you know because you played ball. There's never been a hitter like Ted Williams, so I'm just assuming that Jim must have really been good.
Paul, I've heard so many coulda, shoulda, woulda over the years. If I wouldn't have gotten hurt in Little League, if I wouldn't have gotten hurt in high school, man, it's a different level. I was a great hitter in high school. I was recruited in college for hitting. I was a pitcher when I became professional. I was a lefty pitcher. And, you know, I was a great hitter, but I couldn't have hit these guys, you know, and Jim wouldn't have hit him either. And he wouldn't have hit me, and I didn't even make it to the big leagues. So it's crazy to me.
Rick, is there any possibility and we'll cover all the expenses. Could we set up? If Jim would agree, and I realized how long have you been out of baseball?
About 9 months.
Okay, so you're still in pretty good shape, Jim. I don't know. Jim would probably still be a young guy, right? Based on what he told us.
Of course, I'd be ready to go.
Yeah, let's try to set up just a fight. You know, I mean, nothing serious. I don't even want you to throw your best stuff, but we'll just get you two guys together. We'll bring the cameras, and let you, Rick and Jim go at it.
Paul, tell him what's coming. He's got no shot. I promise.
Okay. So you will give him the pitch. What was your best pitch?
I threw a lefty cutter that bared into right-handed hitters.
That's pretty tough. So we will let you. You'll give him the pitch in advance. And as a courtesy to the show, I'll ask you not to go full speed, okay?
All right. Hey, make sure he's got a metal bat, not a wooden one. I'll break it.
Oh, I like the sound of this. Where in Florida are you?
St. Augustine.
Okay, yeah, we can get to you. Not a problem. Maybe in a couple of weeks when spring training starts, we will head down there, Rick. Hey, thank you. We got a guy that pitched a little bit in the big leagues, mainly AAA, Jim from Tuscaloosa, greatest hitter since Ted Williams. And I don't know. We'll bring him to Tuscaloosa. I'm sure the University of Alabama, they got a great stadium there. Or we'll go to Florida, whatever Jim prefers. And I don't know how pitch a little BP.
Sure.
We'll give you the pitches in advance. We will take a break. Maybe Tebow could come out and give us some tips as well. We will take a break. Adam Sparks joins us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. Tennessee football had an amazing year in its first under Josh Heupel. If you go back a year ago, it was around this time that so much carnage was being spilled in that state. And the latest from our next guest, Adam Sparks, how Tennessee football found momentum 1 year after facing such a grim future. If you remember, not only was Jeremy Pruitt let go, a number of his staff members were. The legendary Hall of Fame former football coach and athletic director, Philip Fulmer, also announced his retirement. Adam Sparks joining us. Adam, always great to have you on. Good afternoon. And I imagine the mood in Knoxville is different today than it was last January.
Yeah, a year makes somewhat of a difference. Tennessee doesn't have a result of its NCAA investigation, but if you look back a year ago today and say, how does this end up? I don't think a team with a winning record that went to a bowl, that was the highest scoring team in program history, and a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of NCAA penalties is what you would necessarily see a year into the future. But that's where they're at right now. And for what Tennessee could have ended up in, they've got the best of a bad situation right now. But there's a lot pending on that because NCAA investigation, their internal investigation is done. They don't have a notice of allegations, so we don't know how that's going to end up. But a lot could hinge on what's going on at the NCAA convention this week. There's three policy changes, potential policy changes that are being pushed out there, and all three of them could potentially benefit Tennessee's case, which, again, is pending. The big one is a change in the NCAA Constitution, which will not completely rid NCAA cases of bowl bans, but it will make them few and far between, especially if it's if you have a violation that doesn't have much to do with what went on the field. And Tennessee's was about recruiting violations, impermissible benefits under Jeremy Pruitt's staff. And so they did not self-impose a bowl ban, and that was a little bit of a gamble, but they feel like the legislation is going to move that way to where that wouldn't be a penalty that they would get anyway. The other two are probably a little further down the road, but they've gained traction in the NCAA. They'll be discussed this week at the convention, which is the idea of punishing bad actors, so to speak, which would be, you know, cheating coaches and those sort of things. As far as infractions, the third one would be schools getting credit if they self-report or if they're very transparent with the NCAA. That's actually a rule. You're supposed to do that, but a lot of schools don't do it. So Tennessee did self-report. They're transparent. They fired their so-called bad actor. They felt like Jeremy Pruitt and a couple of his assistants, and they feel like a bowl ban is not in their future.
Yeah, Adam, it's hard to find a school, I would think, that acted more appropriately than the chancellor at Tennessee and the university in dumping not only all these actors, but the athletic director who gave Jeremy Pruitt an extension. It would almost be shameful, would it not, if Tennessee was not rewarded for some of that?
Yeah, and you know, they're having to balance a lot of things now because they know that they have to show contrition to the NCAA. You always have to do that. If you self-impose too little, you could get hammered in the infractions process. But they know that policy changes are on their side. They know this is moving towards something that would maybe mitigate some of their penalties. But they have to show enough contrition. So they've done scholarship cuts. We know that through our reporting. They've already done some scholarship reductions last year. Josh Heupel is working under, I think, a reduced roster now. I think his scholarships will probably be in the 70s this next year as they were this past season. So he's having to balance that. They're having to show scholarship reductions. They didn't do the postseason ban. They pushed out who they thought were guilty. Now, we don't know what the violations are. Now, the NCAA may look at it and say this went higher than Jeremy Pruitt or this went lower than Jeremy Pruitt, but so far, Tennessee's stuck with the story. Jeremy Pruitt threatened to sue, and that didn't go anywhere. So Tennessee's in a pretty good place. If you clean out a lot of the people that you felt like cheated, you're going to be in a lot better shape with the NCAA, and they're probably going to be. But I don't think they're going to get a notice of allegations for a while, which really is probably good news. The longer that this gets stretched out, I think the closer you get to policy changes at the NCAA level, which will probably benefit Tennessee.
I know there are no easy answers for questions that deal with what the outcome is going to be, considering we don't know what the charges are going to be. But what do you hear in terms of the range of how light or how punishing punitive this could end up being?
Well, I mean, you never know, and this is, again, to a lot of the constitutional stuff that's going on at the NCAA this week, is that the idea is that this needs to be more standardized. So many investigations, if you look at case law in the NCAA, you'll see two different schools commit the same violations and get completely two different penalties. And Tennessee is hoping that that's a little more standardized in their case, that the alleged violations were recruiting, so they have to do with scholarships, and so they can just take those cuts, some maybe other recruiting restrictions, and that be that. I think they're probably going to have moderate penalties for better or worse, to kind of sit on the fence. I think that's what they're going to be. It's not going to be something that'll shock anybody, but it will be something that's just. And you know, the thing is, Donde Plowman, the chancellor, when she fired Jeremy Pruitt and made all these announcements a year ago today, she did call the violations of what she knew about egregious and shocking and disturbing. So you necessarily can't put those labels, those adjectives on the violations, and then, you know, a year or more later, expect to get very minor infractions. I think they'll be hit, but they probably won't be hit hard as schools have in the past.
Adam, Philip Fulmer was part of that, and I'm still not clear, maybe you are, on what that was all about. Do we know any more about his departure?
Officially, he retired. Now, we just published within the last half hour the fiscal report of Tennessee for this past year, and we already knew some of what the buyouts were. He was paid a $1.3 million buyout. He kept his salary through that year. So he wasn't found to be culpable. That's one thing. The blame was put on Pruitt and his staff, so he wasn't found culpable. And they did allow him to retire. Of course, if you're paying a buyout, that's not necessarily how retirements usually go. But I think there was somewhat of an agreement there. You know, that's a man that's got, you know, just an immense legacy. There's been a lot of ire towards Phil Fulmer within the fan base the past few years. But this is a guy that won as much as anybody in terms of winning percentage in school history. When he was a coach, he won a national title. And I think there was a whole lot of a desire to keep him in good graces as much as they could. And so, you know, that's $1.3 million buyout, and that's making sure that the blame, whether right or wrong, was not on him.
It's a nice buyout, Adam.
I'd take a little bit of it. I'd take a percentage of it.
Give me some of that. I on the field, I know that we're talking about off-the-field issues. How, if at all, do you think or can you tell this has affected recruiting?
It affected in-state recruiting. There was some, you know, bad publicity that was spread out throughout the state that you don't want to go to Tennessee because they're going to get hit hard with NCAA. I think that chatter has lessened. You know, more than anything, I think COVID protocols probably hurt Tennessee in-state recruiting as much as anything in this past year. But they finished with a top 15 class, which is much higher than I thought they would get at a Josh Heupel's first class with all the things against them. And it's not going to hurt them in terms of the players that they go get, I think, in this next class. It will hurt them in terms of the numbers. They're not going to have 85. They're going to have somewhere in the 70s again, probably low 70s, I believe, and in terms of scholarships. And so you can sign a full class if you want, but you've got to be very selective in the transfer portal. You can't just go and grab somebody on a gamble. You've got to pick them out to fill a spot. And they signed a full class. They're not going to get rid of a full class because they will have super seniors coming back. So they'll bring in good players. They just won't have as many of them, and they'll have to be very selective in the roles that they choose for them. People have thought that Tennessee is maybe dragging their feet some in the transfer portal, losing more than they're pulling in, but I think that's more just about trying to manage the roster and the limited numbers they're going to have.
Regardless of all that, Adam, it's a better day today than it was a year ago. Many, many thanks. Fantastic conversation. We will talk to you soon. Adam Sparks joining us from Knoxville, and we head to the break. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Back here on a late Tuesday afternoon, early evening, and let's check in with Legend.
What's going on, Paul?
Legend.
Man, you got time for me to tell you a quick story?
You bet.
When I left Harlan County Jail, and that's a metaphor for Shannon, and I do know what that means, in 1983, going to St. Clair Prison, I probably was as prejudiced as a 17-year-old kid could be, Paul. I mean, folks I grew up with didn't like black folk. What can I tell you? You know what I'm saying? I mean, we are how we're raised. Wouldn't you agree, Paul?
Yes.
Well, when I got to St. Clair Prison in 1983 at the age of 17 with a life sentence for first-degree murder, I instantly joined the white gang in prison because you was either part of a white gang, a black gang, or a Spanish gang. And in that prison, we hated each other. St. Clair Prison was a friggin' jungle when it opened in 1983, and there's some correctional officers out there that can verify that. Well, every day we would go out on the yard, Paul, and we would stare each other down and smoke cigarettes. And we talked trash to each other. They'd be fights, stabbings, killings with baseball bats. They dug up the yard one time at St. Clair Prison and found 800 man shanks that were made in the prison, Paul. But out there on that yard, there was an old black man that pushed the cart around every day. His job was to pick up the cigarette butts out of the cigarette cans. And we would make fun of him because he would take the cigarette butts out of the can, no matter how small they was, and unroll it and roll it up in a top paper and smoke it so he would have something to smoke. Well, in 1984, Paul, there was a riot at St. Clair Prison. I was in the yard when it started. Somebody ran up behind me and stabbed me with a screwdriver that they had sharpened down into a point, stabbed me in the shoulder. I fell out on the ground and began basically to bleed to death. I kind of blacked out. I remembered somebody kind of grabbing me by the arm and helping me up. I didn't know it, but that old black man, Henry, put me on his cigarette cart and pushed me to the front gate and rung the bell, and the guard, seeing what was going on, and was able to get me through and into the infirmary where they saved my life. Now, in that infirmary, I don't know if you've ever talked to God, Paul, but I have. I remember I talked to God in that infirmary, and God said to me, I don't know if you've ever heard the voice of God, but I have. He said to me, who are you to hate Henry or any black man if I made him? I didn't have a conversation with you or ask your approval how I made that individual. And me and you didn't have a conversation that you would be white, short, whatever. I made you, and if I made you, that should be good enough. That day changed my life, and I never hated anyone, black, white, or whatever, because almost dying will do that to you when somebody saves your life, brother. And my question to you, Paul, is this. Now that I'm 57 and I love all people, where are the intelligent people, white and black, that will stand up and say enough is enough? If God made you, that's good enough. Let's start from here and go on and build something real and be one people. Because if white people and black people would wake up, Paul, they'd realize we got a lot worse enemies that hate us regardless if we white or black. They don't care. They just hate us because we're American. We need to wake up and put the hate away. Where are the intelligent people, Paul? That man saved my life. He changed my life that day, Paul. And I appreciate you letting me share it. But where are they, Paul? Where are the people intelligent enough now in both races to say, let's put it away for our kids, our grandkids, the next generation, and be smart enough to know if God made you, That ought to be good enough for all of us, regardless if you short, ugly like Legend, or a little groundhog like Squirrel.
Legend, we're out of time, but I can't thank you enough for sharing that story. That was truly amazing. We are up against the break. Back after this.